quick. Run for your life. It's the Loot Mechanics Podcast. Beerless and Skolmas have returned from beyond space and time to wreak havoc upon all they survey while chatting sarcastically about video and tabletop gaming. With snark and poorly thought out hot takes, they may bring even the strongest man to their knees, shattering even the most stalwart sanity. Run while you still can.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Skolmas.
I'm Beerless.
And, what's been up with you?
Not a whole lot. Been working a lot. That's about it.
Well, it is cold out.
Yes.
That tends to make you work more.
How about you?
Not much. Just spending way too much money on tabletop role-playing games, but...
Hey, that's nothing new.
Yeah, well, I've effectively bought the same game 3 times. Kind of.
Again, that's still fairly normal for you.
It's one thing me to buy, you know, like sci-fi games, you know, different types of sci-fi games that have similar engines. Like when I bought Star Wars D20 version, which ran the D&D 3.5 engine. Wow, I also bought the Farscape D20 game, which ran the same engine. They're both sci-fi, but one has Jedis, and one has Muppets. So there was pretty distinct differences, right? In this case, I bought 3 games that are all using a modified version of the Apocalypse engine. One significantly modified. It uses Forged in the Dark. But still. And they're all monsters. You play monsters defending a dungeon type scenario.
Hey.
So a couple months ago, I got No Country for Old Kobolds, which is now out of print, basically, unless you want the digital version. But I got a printed copy from somewhere. I've recently got myself a printed copy. Haven't received it yet, but I've ordered for The Dungeon, which is a comedy fantasy game. And I also have a copy of Wicked Ones coming, which is the one that runs the Forged in the Dark engine. But yeah, they're all very, very, very similar games using pretty much the same engine. I'm just interested to see the differences. But anyway, yeah, that's about what I've been doing, aside from working.
Man, you enjoy it, so no harm, no foul.
True. I mean, it's only money. And it is supporting the people in the role-playing industry, and that's a good thing.
Especially in this year.
Yes.
Well.
Anyway, shall we get on with the first topic?
Sounds good.
The main topic.
So, Beerless,
yeah.
How's that pick for Game of the Year standing up for you?
Well, I realize that it's never going to be Game of the Year now. But, you know, when we recorded that show, it hadn't come out yet. Mm. And, well, I think we said on multiple occasions, if they do it right, and obviously they did not do it right.
True. When that was recorded, the name of CD Projekt Red still held some cachet and was still considered good. And people believed what they had to say.
Yes, and unfortunately, they've done the same shit so many other gaming companies have done. And at least it reinforced my long-standing policy of not buying a game until it's been out for a while, so that I don't have to act as bug finder for a company that I just spent $60 or so.
Very true. You're not an unpaid beta tester or a QA for them.
Now, if I'm not paying anything and I'm getting early access, then yeah, I expect to be looking for bugs and, you know, reporting on any glitches or anything weird that I find. That's perfectly acceptable. But if I paid full fucking price for a game, I expect that game to come out and be functional and be enjoyable. And from what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, Cyberpunk 2077 is a trash heap on fire.
Yeah. Well, now, if you're playing on a next-gen console, or you have a really good PC, it's not so bad.
No, but it's not as bad.
Most people were playing on PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones, because they were told it would play, quote, surprisingly well on those consoles.
And it turns out the only thing that was surprising is how many people bought that line of bull.
Yeah. That, well, according to many of CD Projekt Red's investors, was tantamount to fraud. Mm-hmm. The company's being sued in a class action lawsuit by its investors for defrauding them out of millions of dollars. Because they invested heavily, the stock price went up, and then the game came out, and they lost their shirts.
Well, I hope they win. I honest to God hope they win. I had a lot of faith in CD Projekt Red, and with good reason. They've had a stellar name up to this point. But now, I hope they get their asses burned, and I mean burned hard. Because hopefully that sets precedence. If you screw over the community, you screw over your investors with this kind of bullshit, you deserve to get burned, and burned hard.
Yeah, now they're in Poland, so if I remember right, and I'm not sure what Polish law is regarding this, if they have any securities fraud type laws or anything like that.
Well, I'm sure they do.
If this was in the United States, that CEO would be looking at jail time for stock price manipulation from his public comments. And regardless, there's a lawsuit here, and there will be discovery, and there will be developers and producers and whatnot, executives brought in, and they're going to have to testify under oath. If this does end up going to trial, especially, and they're going to have to tell the tale of whether or not they believed that game should have launched in its condition. And especially for those that spoke publicly and were giving glowing reviews and really pumping up the game as to knowing what they knew, why did they say those things? At the very least, there are top executives at CD Projekt Red that are fucked, and rightly so. I think the devs are doing what the best they could do, and I would not be surprised to see devs that if actual developers are brought in, I would not be surprised to see them say, hey, we needed another year for this game.
And they just were told, nope, we need to get it out. We need to make money.
Yeah, it's the producers and above are the ones that will end up burning. Now, I hope the company doesn't go under. I hope that the bad apples are thrown to the wolves, tossed out, and that good management comes back, and that they can go back to being the trusted CD Projekt Red, the company that everyone believed in, the company where they would put out a game and it may have some bugs at first because games do, but it wouldn't, they wouldn't lie to people and tell them, oh, this is going to run great on your system. And then it really shouldn't have even played on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, no, it just, it almost seems to me like, they didn't really consider the PS4 and the Xbox, whatever.
Xbox One.
Were even a candidate for the game. They just discovered that, oh, well, if we don't include these, then we're going to lose a lot of money. So they said, yeah, it'll play great on those. And they're like, will it? And the devs are like, I doubt it. And they're like, well, fuck it. We're going to hype it up. And they hyped it up.
But here's the thing. There is no PS5 or Xbox Series X version of Cyberpunk 2077. They're running the PS4 and Xbox One versions just with much better processors and video cards, so it runs better on those systems. They're running the old gen software. The PC version is the only one that's actually running on, you know, the thing it's supposed to, it was developed for the PC.
Well,
they designed the PS4 version and the Xbox One version with real-time lighting throughout. The PS4 and Xbox Ones, especially the original base versions, can't do that. And it's basically kicking the shit out of those systems. They can't handle it, and they crash. And that's just one problem. Of course, the PS5 and the Xbox Series X and S can handle real-time lighting. But I don't understand where they were thinking about this. Because from what I understand, real-time lighting is in the base components of the engine. It wasn't something that was put in, over and above as an add-on that would look good on the PS5 and the Xbox Series systems. No, it was intended from the start throughout, even in areas where it's not needed. And yet, why? And then they go out and say, oh, this works surprisingly well. Does it? Is 20 frames a second in between crashes surprisingly good?
Oh, and then there's all those glitches. I lost count how many game-breaking glitches they've had.
Yeah.
Like the corrupted save files.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you've been playing for 100 hours? Or no, I think it's after 5 hours, your file becomes susceptible to corruption. And everything you did is gone.
Yeah. Now, they did fix that.
Well, I'm sure they did. But still, on day one, if I was playing and I put all this time and effort into it and I put everything away because, you know, I had to go, you know, have Christmas dinner or whatever, and I go back to playing and it just gone.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, I'd be furious.
Yep. And what's ridiculous about it is this is the game that both major new consoles were really hoping for, because they didn't have their own big titles to launch with these consoles. They were depending on CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk 2077 to be their big, you know, carry this puppy home, make the big sales. Even though it came out 3 weeks after the consoles, it still was, that was the big hitter game that, oh, this is going to one, this is going to sell this console for the Christmas season. And before Christmas, they were having to remove it from their stores for digital purchase and refund all the sales.
That's, you know, it's bad when PlayStation just says, okay, that's it. Anybody who wants a refund, just let us know. You'll get your refund. It was almost a blanket coverage. Just, we don't need a reason. Just put in a report and we'll get it taken care of.
Well, part of that, CD Projekt Red said, oh, anybody who wants a refund will get a refund. And then people tried it, and the PlayStation store was like, no, you've played this too long, even though it was crashing all the time and all that. Doesn't matter. You've played too long. We're not going to give you a refund. Then they complained to CD Projekt Red, and there were some discussions. And the next day they went, sure, we'll give everybody their refunds. Oh, by the way, yoink, it's not on our store anymore. There are going to be no more sales of this thing until it works. Now, the people that didn't want a refund, that decided to just muscle through, they could keep it. But that was basically, oh, let's see, CD Projekt Red, you told these people they could get refunds? Sure, we'll give them refunds, fine. But we're not going to sell your game anymore. Fuck all y'all. Come back to us when you have a working product. That basically just was a punch in the... Because CD Projekt Red didn't want people to get refunds. They promised them, oh, no, stick with us. We're going to get fixes in and your game will be working great. Even on the PS4 and the Xbox One. Just give us a little time. By February, we'll have it going. And now the vast majority of those people are gone.
Good.
And that was pretty much the biggest market they had for the game.
Yeah.
They're fucked.
Like I said, we hoped that it was going to be good. And I am so glad I didn't put a damn penny down on that, because I got burned with too many other games.
Yeah.
So I just don't buy them right off the bat.
Me either.
Nope. You fix it first, then I'll play it.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's old news by the time I get around to it. It's new to me.
Yeah, I waited a couple years to get
No Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky and The Outer Limits, actually. I waited over a year for that one.
Hmm? You said Outer Limits. It's Outer Worlds, isn't it?
Yes, I'm sorry, Outer Worlds. And I waited for it to show up on the Switch. And yes, it is playable on the Switch. I know a lot of people are like, what? Why would you play it on that?
Because you're a masochist? Fun. I don't know.
It's fun. But anyway, that's beside the point. Because I waited for it to come out in a workable state on a platform I wanted to play it on. And in both cases, that was fine. In fact, same thing. I waited for Elite Dangerous. And it's in really good state. So, yeah. I don't feel like I should be the guinea pig, the one that, you know, jumps right in on a product. It's better to just let everybody else deal with the frustration. Maybe someday I'll get myself a copy of Cyberpunk 2077. Probably when it's they inevitably come out with their Game of the Year edition, which will have all the updates and fixes and probably some free DLC. And probably like half price. That'd be great.
I'll wait for a Steam sale. Yeah. Maybe a year or two down the road.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it available on Steam or is it like an Epic exclusive?
It'll eventually end up on Steam. Everything else does.
Sure. I honestly haven't even bothered to look at what platform it's being sold on, because I'm not going to buy it anytime soon. Certainly not after this.
This just adds so much more dread for the future, because CD Projekt Red had such a good name. it was almost a given that the game they're putting out is going to be good. And they do this. So who's left that's worth a damn out there? Crickets.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting here trying left to think.
Out there who's worth a damn. And the game I've been looking forward to since I first heard it was announced was Elder Scrolls VI. Because I'm such a huge fan of Skyrim. And my hype has just almost completely died.
Sure, but that's not going to be out for another year or so. And I'm pretty sure Bethesda is going to put out a good version, at least for PC and Xbox series consoles.
Well, and you'd like to hope so. They've got Microsoft standing behind them, so that might be more of a don't fuck this up or else.
Yeah, because it's now effectively a first party title.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not from outside of the Microsoft bubble. This is like they gave the company making the new Halo game till next spring to come in. That was supposed to be their launch title for the new Xbox. And they gave them a freaking extra 6 months just to make sure it's right, to make sure it doesn't do a Cyberpunk 2077. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're going to give Bethesda the room they need to make sure that Elder Scrolls 6, when it does come out, is a hit it out of the park sort of title.
I'm still hopeful, but I'm not buying it in advance.
Oh, no.
I'm going to wait till it comes out, and I'm going to see if it's playable. If it's not, I'll continue to wait.
That's a good thing about games is they're usually not limited titles. It's not something like you have to pre-order it or buy it on Kickstarter and there's only 500 copies available initially at launch. Otherwise, you have to wait for the second version to come out eventually, that sort of thing. It's not a limited quantity. There's going to be literally millions of copies available. If you don't buy it in the first few months, who cares? You'll get it.
Right now, the only thing I intend to pre-order is the next expansion for Guild Wars 2.
Well, yeah, but that's also a known title.
Well, they haven't fucked it up yet. Yeah, there's been bugs. There's been issues, minor issues, as far as I can tell. But I haven't had any problem with them. Every single time I've pre-ordered, it's been playable. It's been amazing from the start. So that's the only one.
Tabletop gaming news.
Okay, so since it's been what, not quite a month since we last recorded.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of other big stories that we missed in that time, and there were a few, but only one that really was regarding tabletop role-playing. And it was a debate that I saw online recently regarding Pathfinder 2E. Would you like to talk a little bit about Taking 20 and his video that caused so much controversy?
Well, I don't even know why it's that big of a controversy. Basically, what he said was he's a huge fan of Paizo Games. You know, they're, as far as he's concerned, they're an amazing company, and he loves to death so many of the people involved with Pathfinder and Paizo in general. And I mean, I understand where he's coming from. They're a good company. I'm just not a huge fan of Pathfinder. And he went into his video basically just saying that, you know, he's quitting Pathfinder 2 because the same kind of stuff he ran across with Pathfinder 1, where the farther you get along in the game, the more powerful you become, the more restricted you become. You have to play your character like it's a video game, and you have to do this certain rotation, or you're basically not playing the game right if you don't do it this way. You have to have a certain build, and you have to do these certain rotations, or you're not going to succeed.
You're a hindrance to your group, which is something we found in our own playing of Pathfinder a few years ago, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tried playing a bard, and I was basically useless. I was a laughingstock. I had a few things I could do, but it was an interesting character, and I could play it imaginatively and role play it and whatnot. But the barbarian in our group was the only one that was optimized and could stomp the living shit out of everything because he was set up with synergies and whatnot. And that's the thing about Pathfinder. It's all about optimizing your character. But second edition, it's like an MMO. You're stuck with a rotation. If you optimize your character to play the way it should be played, you're going to be using the same few abilities constantly, regardless of whether you're level 3 or level 12. Same rotation. Every fight, over and over.
And even with D&D 5e, that still becomes an issue. Because, I mean, if you're going to be able to outpace the damage of the big bad evil guy, or whatever, there are set things you need to do to maximize your character. But it's an easier system to play. You have more role-playing possibilities, in my opinion. And I have more fun with D&D 5e.
Sure. And that was kind of the point that Cody, with Taking 20, was trying to make. Was that if you've got, in his rebuttal video that he did, it was because he got all manner of hate from Pathfinder fans on his first video. So in his second one, he basically came down to, and he showed all kinds of detailed breakdowns comparing apples to apples comparisons between the same fight, whether it was in Pathfinder 2e or D&D 5th edition, and how it just worked out better on the D&D side. And he's like, if you're going to have unsatisfying, boring combat in both games, why would you play the overly complicated, crunchy one when you can play the easier one that's more fun for role-playing? So he and his group are going to go play D&D 5th edition. And the reason I wanted to bring this up today was not because of the debate. I mean, we're on the same point on here. I think we both agree with his conclusions, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to talk about more is what happened in between his two videos on this. Because his first video was pretty clear-cut and very polite. He was very clear that, you know, like you said, he loves Paizo. And he was is glowing, talking about how awesome Paizo is and how supportive they've been of his relatively large role-playing channel.
Right.
Even though he's done very few videos about Pathfinder or Starfinder. And when he has done videos, like he had a really big video that compared Pathfinder 2nd edition to D&D 5th edition. And he was very critical in that video of Pathfinder. They've still been very supportive of him over this time. Meanwhile, most of his videos are very D&D 5th edition focused.
Right.
And Wizards of the Coast don't give him the time of day. They never send him anything. I remember, and I mentioned this in one of our podcasts months ago, when Rime of the Frost Maiden came out for D&D.
Right.
That I saw an unboxing video that this one YouTuber did. He had gotten a nice package from Wizards of the Coast to do an unboxing and a quick review of Rime of the Frostmaiden. They sent him the standard copy of the book with the standard cover. They sent him the special edition, which is for in-store only purchase. They sent him the dice. They sent him all kinds of cool stuff. Right?
Right.
He never does D&D content. He was a channel that focused, a very small channel, in fact, like 5,000 subscribers that focused on Rifts. That's how I knew him from, is I've seen his Rifts content. And I was like, what the hell is Wizards of the Coast doing? They sent it to this guy. But Taking 20 has hundreds of thousands of subscribers, does all kinds of D&D content. Wizards of the Coast doesn't send him anything. And yet, the fanboys from Pathfinder were accusing Cody of Taking 20 of just doing that video because Wizards of the Coast paid him to do it. Are you guys high?
No, fanboys are fanboys, and you're never going to change their mind. If you say anything bad about whatever it is they're fanning over, there has to be a logical reason for it. And they can't wrap their mind around somebody going, you know, I love this company, but I can't play this anymore because I'm not having any fun.
I don't know.
If you're having fun, he's not telling you to stop playing. He's telling you this is why he's not having any fun and why he's going to quit for now. He may come back in the future, but right now, he's having fun playing D&D 5e, so that's what he's going to do.
And the thing was,
more power to him.
He wasn't even using it as content for his channel. He was just on his Patreon. He was running a game for Patreon members that he had been running for about a year, and it wasn't working out. They weren't enjoying themselves because they were bored with the same rotations over and over. And people even admitted that, yeah, that's the way it works, but oh, just be more creative. Oh, you mean have my players gimp themselves? Because they did that. And in his second video, he talked about how they did make some changes, especially their druid, who wanted to make some changes so that they weren't constantly having to transform into dinosaurs and dragons, because that's all they could really do to be top of their game. And he ended up having a total player kill. Everybody in the group died. Because one player tried to do something a little more fun. That's not a good game. You might be
really,
you might be love the company, but it doesn't mean the game works.
Right.
And they honestly should move to a game that fucking works.
Well, and hopefully by criticizing and pointing out these, glaring issues, he's hoping that they can fix it. I mean, that would take a lot of money to put out, errata, but they could do it.
Honestly,
and if it fixed the game and made it more fun, they might get more people playing it.
The thing is, they don't even have to do errata. This is Paizo. They throw out books like they're fucking candy on Halloween. All they got to do is put out one of their players' guides, a new player's guide that has updated things that make their new interesting things to do with the character classes. subclasses or whatever that give people more options that are more fun, that still retain, you know, some optimal builds, so that they're not constantly having to do the same thing over and over and over. Or they could put out a new game mastery guide that does things on the back end to adjust things for the game master, so that it makes them, you know, give more ability for the players to have fun. I would suggest more on the player side. Do it on the player facing. Just give more options. Make changes, you know, or new versions of other builds that are considered now optimal, but are fun, so that a ranger isn't really best if they go with a bow and they stay at range and they just shoot with these certain rotations, bam, 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 down the line, every freaking level. Even though they're getting new abilities, they pick abilities that are passives that are triggered off of these few abilities. They run bang, 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 over and over again. It's, I mean, literally one book, and they could solve this problem.
Yeah, but they've had this problem since they began, and it actually started with 3.5.
True.
So, and I don't see them changing it anytime soon.
That's actually a point that he made. I think it was in his rebuttal. People were talking about how, oh, well, Pathfinder, people like the crunch of Pathfinder. Well, no. Yes and no. He looked at the history. 3.5 was pretty crunchy, especially towards the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was just a mass of rules. You had so many different books you could look into for all kinds of rules. There was all kinds of stuff. Rules for everything. Well, when D&D moved to 4th edition, they went and created Pathfinder so that people could continue to use their books for D&D off of now this new core set of books. And they made changes enough so that it was not subverting the old license, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they simplified things. At that time, Pathfinder was the simplest version. Pathfinder First Edition was mm-hmm. the simplest version of D&D available. Now,
yes,
as the game went on, because 4th edition was not simple at all, but they, you know, people went to Pathfinder in droves.
Mm-hmm.
Also part included. Of it was because 4th edition D&D sucked, but also because simplest version of D&D available, even though it wasn't really D&D. Anyway, over time, 5th edition comes out, and people went to it to a large degree because it was at that point the simplest version of D&D available. People like simple.
Mm-hmm.
Pathfinder 2nd edition came out, and it's more like 4th edition in complexity. It got more complex. Have you seen the main rule book? It's almost twice the size of the main rule book of Pathfinder 1st edition. It's nearly 700 pages.
I don't doubt it.
I could drop that off a fourth floor roof and kill someone below. It's massive. And yes, I bought it because I'm a simp for role-playing games.
But you also got it in a bundle, didn't you?
I did, and it was only $30.
Woohoo.
Of course, I'm never going to run it, but that's beside the point. Because it requires a bunch more books, and I'm not buying them. Thank you. Anyway.
Yes.
The whole thing, it's just ridiculous, and it makes my head hurt. But you said that fanboys are fanboys, right?
They are.
I kind of disagree with that to some degree, because you know how I feel about Feng Shui.
Right.
I am a massive fan of Feng Shui.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved it ever since first edition came out. I bought all the books that I could get my hands on. I have second edition. And I have two copies of it just because I went, got one. And I was like, ooh, I must have a second. I've got two copies of the first edition still. I love me some Feng Shui. But when Atlas Games fucks up, I will be the first to say that was a bad choice. It doesn't mean I'm going to run away from the game. It doesn't mean I'm going to, oh, fuck you. I'm not playing your game anymore because it's Feng Shui and I love me some Feng Shui. But when they came out with their subscription model that they're launching this year, where every quarter they're going to put out an adventure book, effectively a small module that they want you to pay for, and they'll send it to you, and that's fine. I basically said, I would love to do this if it were rules expansions, but it's not. Everything they have announced, they've got the entire slate for 2021 announced, and they're all adventure books. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before.
We did.
Why would I do that? I don't like buying pre-written adventures. They're a waste of my time. They don't have new rules, so fuck them.
Well, and you've been a, you know, just like me, we don't run modules, we do homebrew, and we just do it our way with the game as a basic framework to play with.
Yeah, but it's just, so that whole idea that, you know, fanboys are going to be fanboys, I don't feel is completely true, because I am a hardcore fanboy. But when a company messes up and is getting criticism from others, I can look at it and go, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of people that don't like what Atlas Games is doing with Feng Shui 2 right now. They don't feel it's real support. And they've got a point. And, you know, I'm not going to get on them about it. If I thought they were wrong, I would say, nope, Atlas Games is doing it perfectly right. But, you know, you're welcome to your opinion. I'm not going to flip out on them because, well, maybe it's because I'm, you know, over 50 and, you know, not a moron. Maybe these people are very young and stupid, or they've been raised on the internet and don't know how to be civil anymore. I don't know.
Well, and you're calling yourself a hardcore fanboy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah,
but there are a lot of, I guess it would be toxic fanboy and not hardcore fanboy. A toxic fanboy, they can't take criticism, period. If you say one bad thing about their game, they come unglued on you because you cannot talk shit about their god. Sure. And that's what I see them. I see them more as religious fanatics. You cannot talk shit about their whatever they happen to be fanning over. This is the altar that they worship on. Okay. And every game, every fandom has them. Those are the ones who go out and kill people because this actress didn't portray their whatever properly, or they became too enamored of this actress, and you know what I mean.
Yeah, but well, I don't know if they'd go that far, but
they have gone that far.
Well, not these particular fanboys.
Well, maybe not those in particular, but others have.
But there's been some very ugly and rude comments made to Cody with Taking 20. And as somebody who did enjoy Pathfinder, who got everybody in our gaming group playing Pathfinder, I introduced Pathfinder to the gaming group. I'm the one who brought you guys out. You bought the books, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I have them.
And I know our Northern contingent, they also bought the books. We all were pretty deep into it for what? 2 years?
2 years.
Yeah, we played that for quite some time. you and me took, you know, bouncing back and forth with Bjorn did some game mastering on it as well. We all basically took some turns in same setting and just had some fun with it. But it, in the end, we moved to 5th edition because it was actually fun.
Mm-hmm.
I could play a naked halfling barbarian, which was my very first D&D 5th edition character. Yep. And he's actually pretty optimized. I mean, the naked barbarian build works great on a halfling. The only thing you sacrifice is a strength bonus. But you have a really nice dex bonus.
Well, and now that Tasha's has come out, that changes that right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't even think of that. You could totally build a buff halfling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Throw points into strength, constitution, and dex. Ooh. That would be one hell of a naked barbarian. But
yep.
That's fine. But the thing is, the reason I made that character wasn't because, oh my God, so optimized, dude. I built it that way because that's funny as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
You had a feral little halfling barbarian covered in pig shit, wearing only a loincloth at best, riding on a swine on a boar as his mount, which he raised himself. That was the idea. And it was flipping awesome. Of course, it didn't go anywhere because I got a better idea. You know, Frank the Warlock, who also plays fairly optimized, but is still fun because there's room for role playing in it. It's not all number crunching.
Yep.
I mean, I make sure I've got the best spells for what I want to do. My points are put out as best as I can. He's built to the best of my capabilities to be a pretty badass warlock.
You want to get an idea of what we're talking about with this, the rotation kind of thing? Look into the videos. Can't remember. It's like Demonic or something like that. He does a show called Tales from My D&D Campaign. You watch it, and as the game is progressing, I mean, there's just these short little videos, anywhere between like 15 minutes, and I think the longest one is like 45 minutes. But it's the players going through these little stories, and you'll see how their numbers come up. And it's like, I'm going to make this attack. And he adds up. He gets a +2 bonus from this. He gets a +1 bonus from this. A +1 haste bonus. A bonus from this effect. A bonus from this effect. A bonus from this effect. And it rolls. It comes up with his roll to be like a 41.
I believe you're speaking of Demon AC. Demonac.
Right.
Yeah, I just looked him up. It is Tales from My D&D Campaign is what you're looking for on YouTube.
It's an entertaining show. I enjoyed the hell out of it. But you watch those videos and it's like, holy crap, there's a lot of math. It just seemed so over the top. And it's not Pathfinder. They're playing 3.0 or 3.5, one of the two.
I don't know. I just wish he didn't have autoplay on his sizzle reel.
Oh.
That's where that sound came from. I don't know if you heard it.
I didn't hear anything.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be on the podcast. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure that I got on here so I could subscribe so I can look at those later.
Well, like I said, they're fun to watch. I really enjoyed them. It's just, wow, the amount of minutia that goes into that. I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. And 5.0 is not so much about that because you don't have the heavy reliance on feats that you did in 3 and 3.5 either. Or mm-hmm. in Pathfinder, which is a feat monster. This, to a large degree, is why I tend to be more of a person that wants to play simpler games, like Powered by the Apocalypse games. The moves are, you have a few abilities, and you just talk through what you want to do. And the master of ceremonies, or whatever you want to call them, or other players in the group can go, hey, that sounds like you're trying to use this move. Oh, yeah, so let's roll it. Otherwise, you don't roll. You just talk about what you want to do, and unless it's, you know, something that needs to be contested or really fits with a move, it happens. It's just a fun, flowing way of doing things. It's not crunchy at all. And you don't go and try and, you know, maximize your character. You don't have to even think about that because your characters just, there's no way to do that, really. Sure, you might put certain points in things here or there, but you're talking about a range in your attributes, usually between +2 and -1. That's not a lot of range to make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
So if you accidentally put your -1, because usually it'll be +2, +1, +1, 0, and -1. For your attributes, and you just scatter them amongst the usually 5 attributes. I'm just talking in general. Some, right. You know, different Powered by the Apocalypse games do it differently. Some even only have 1 attribute. But regardless, the average is 5. You put out your points. There you go. And if it doesn't work, you can pretty easily modify it later on. But having a +2 as opposed to a +1 is literally so little of a difference as to be pretty much non-existent, especially with the aid and hinder move that another character in the group can make. I could be trying to hit the big bad evil guy. So I'm making this attack action, and I'm re-rolling for that. And everybody else decides they want to aid me in my attack, and usually that means a +1 or a -1 to the enemy, we can wreck him with bonuses. Just if it's one character hindering and one aiding, that in itself, a -1 to +1 is a +2 effectively to my attack. And when you're rolling 2d6, let's say +2, if I've got that as my optimal attribute, because, you know, let's optimize. I've gained +4 on top of my dice rolls. All I need to get is a 7 from a conditional action. So rolling over a 3 with 2d6 is simple, just to get a 7. And if I can get a 10 or better, it's a perfect, which means I'm able to hit and do full damage or whatever I was trying to do, and nothing bad happens to me. If I get a 7 to 9, oh, sure, I hit and do my full damage, but they're able to hit me back. Or there's some cost to me. Fine. It's just so much better and so much easier than, oh, I don't know, Pathfinder.
I think we got a little off track with this.
I know. It's just, yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Wrapping things up.
Okay, so that's about it this week. Do you have anything you'd like to talk about or whatever before we go?
Not that I can think of, really. I just... call me unprepared.
Okay. Well, the only thing I really have to add is that obviously, if you've been listening for a while, this kind of came up out of nowhere. You're now hearing this on a Wednesday rather than a Friday. And that's because, well, decided to, starting with this episode, to change things up. Move this back to Wednesdays where Pixels and Dice used to be. Because, well, to be honest, we record these on a Sunday. And by the time Friday would come along, our supposedly topical discussions weren't so topical anymore. They were kind of stale. So moving it forward to Wednesday kind of makes a big difference, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In fact, I considered swapping it all the way to Monday, where, you know, and moving Ronin role-playing back. But I have Ronin role-playing programmed through, let's see, till March of 2022. So yeah, it's not moving anytime soon.
Apparently not.
I do a lot of solo role-playing on my weekends.
So you play with yourself a lot.
I play with myself all the time. In fact, I'm going to have 2022 finished probably by the end of March. And by the end of this year, maybe through 2025.
Still carpal tunnel catches up to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's so easy. I'm talking about the keyboard.
I can knock out 2 months worth of shows in a weekend. It's pretty awesome. And the editing's super easy. So anyway, I'm really into solo role playing. Sue me. Anyway, so I guess until next time, I'm Squirmus.
Bayless.
Generic catchphrase ending.
You didn't listen, did you? Now, look at you. You are an absolute mess. But at least you survived to gibber and moan before our masters and overlords, Beerless and Scummers. Be sure to tremble under their baleful eye as you give this podcast a great review on the podcast service of your choice, or leave a nice comment over on their website, scummy.com. While you are there, check out all the other content they offer, and don't forget to join the Discord server. If you don't, they will know, and they will seek vengeance.